I want you to imagine just for a second that you have finally made it. You've just purchased your absolute dream home.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And we are not talking about like a nice little house in the suburbs. We are talking about a luxury penthouse.
The dream.
Right. This place spans the 23rd floor, the 24th floor, and it even has its own private roof deck on top of this gleaming waterfront tower. I mean, you are literally living in the clouds.
It sounds like the absolute pinnacle of real estate. Like the kind of place where you just stand by the glass and look down at the world, totally insulated from the chaos down below.
Exactly. But now imagine waking up a few months later and you hear a sound, drip, drip, drip.
Rip.
Yeah. You walk out into your beautiful multi-million dollar living room and water is just pooling on the floor. The roof is leaking. The massive windows are leaking. And the water is actually cascading down into the neighbor's apartment right below you.
Wow.
So naturally, you call the building management, fully expecting them to, fix their building. But instead, they hand you a repair bill for nearly $1 million.
Which fundamentally shatters that whole illusion of the insulated sanctuary.
Yeah.
I mean, suddenly you are staring down the barrel of financial ruin because of a structural failure that you didn't even cause.
Exactly. The
Well.
building management just looks at you and says, hey, those structural walls and those windows, our documents say they are for your exclusive use. So the bill is yours. And
Ouch.
that is exactly the reality of the scenario we are exploring today. Our mission for this deep dive is to unpack a 2026 legal judgment from the State Administrative Tribunal in Western Australia. The case is called Silverview Holdings Pretty LTD versus the owners of Reflections Waterfront Apartments.
Right.
We are going to explore the incredibly high-stakes world of strata law, the true legal definition of common property, and why the precise, I mean microscopic, wording of a building's bylaws can literally make or break you financially. Okay, let's unpack this.
So let's set the scene based on the tribunal documents here. The building in question is the Reflections Waterfront Apartments West Tower. It's a high rise in East Perth, registered way back in 2009. And the applicant, in this case, the person who actually brought the lawsuit, they own Lot 71, which, as you mentioned, is this massive multi-level penthouse.
Right. And by 2024, the situation in Lot 71 is just catastrophic. Water is actively ingressing into the penthouse. And because, water always finds the path of least resistance, it's migrating down into Lot 70, the unit directly below.
Yeah, water damage is never just confined to one spot.
Never. So the Strata Company, which is basically the body, corporate, or homeowners association representing all the owners, they commission an engineering firm called Inhabit to figure out what is going wrong.
And the Inhabit report reveals a fundamental failure of the building's envelope. And just to put that in perspective, the building envelope isn't just like a layer of paint.
Right.
It is the physical separator between the conditioned indoor environment and the raw outdoor elements.
Right.
The report basically concluded the water ingress was caused by this devastating combination of inherent structural defects, original design flaws, and just bad workmanship dating all the way back to the building's original construction.
It's wild. We're talking about heavy, wind-driven rain being pushed at cyclonic speeds into microscopic gaps that simply should never have existed.
Exactly.
The water basically bypassed the seals, got trapped inside the walls, and started rusting the actual structural steel framing of the building itself.
And the fix for that wasn't just a matter of, applying some silicone sealant and calling it a day. We are talking about replacing massive commercial sliding doors, completely tearing up the concrete balcony to replace all the waterproofing membranes and tiling. Yeah,
Jeez.
and physically removing structural window frames to treat the advanced corrosion in the steel members holding the building up.
Which brings us to the quote. They get a quote from a company called Duratec, and they submitted a proposal for the repairs, and the total was a staggering $1,876,105.79.
Wow.
Almost $2 million.
Well, when you factor in the logistics of fixing structural steel 24 stories in the air, scaffolding, specialized trades, wind delays, that number starts to make a grim kind of sense.
It really does. So the Strata Company holds an annual general meeting. They calculate what they believe is the collective share of the repairs for the general common areas, which comes to about $975,000.
Okay.
They raise a special levy to cover that portion. Then they turn to the owner of the penthouse, Lot 71, and just drop the remaining balance squarely in their lap.
The tactical execution of this by the Strata company is honestly striking.
Yeah.
The Strata manager sent out the meeting notice to all the other owners, right? and they specifically attached legal advice from a firm called Bugden Allen.
Right.
And this advice essentially argued that the penthouse owner was legally responsible for their own windows and doors, validating the decision to split that massive bill.
And this is a huge, but the penthouse owner had actually secured their own legal advice from Michael Hotchkin Consulting.
Yes.
And that advice completely disputed the Strata Company's interpretation. And the Strata Company strategically chose to just omit that counter advice from the information packet they distributed before the vote.
They completely isolated the penthouse owner. I mean, the other owners voting at the AGM were presented with a very appealing narrative.
Oh, for sure.
They see an authoritative legal document suggesting they could save nearly $1 million by passing the cost to the wealthiest lot in the building.
It honestly reminds me of moving into a shared house with some roommates. One day, the living room ceiling caves in because the roof was installed poorly 10 years ago.
Right.
And your roommates look at you and say, well, the rubble fell mostly on your favorite chair, and you sit in that corner the most, so you have to pay for the entire roof replacement.
That is a perfect analogy.
It feels inherently wrong to pass a collective structural failure onto one person. How on earth did the Strata Company legally justify passing the buck on a structural defect?
Well, to understand how they justified it, we need to look at the baseline legal architecture of Strata Living.
Oh.
Under both the older Prior Act from 1985 and the newer Strata Titles Act that came into effect in Western Australia in 2020, specifically Section 91, Subsection 1 set of the new Act and Section 35, 1 set of the Prior Act, a Strata Company has a strict, absolute statutory duty to repair and maintain common property.
Let's define common property for a second. When you buy an apartment, you essentially own the empty, conditioned cubic airspace inside your walls.
Exactly.
But the physical structure, you know, the exterior walls, the roof, the steel beams, you own that collectively with everyone else as tenants in common, meaning you all hold undivided shares of the entire property and you share the collective risk. If the roof leaks, the social contract of high-rise living dictates that everyone chips in to fix it.
That is the default rule. But the legislature created a specific loophole called an exclusive use bylaw. And the policy rationale behind this is actually quite practical.
Like what?
Well, sometimes an individual owner wants to build a private pergola or install a specialized air conditioning unit on the common roof. Or maybe they have a private courtyard that only they can access.
Okay, that makes sense.
The law allows a strata company to draft a bylaw granting the exclusive use of that specific piece of common property to that specific lot owner.
But the trade-off is massive, right? If you get exclusive use of that property, the financial burden of repairing and maintaining it shifts entirely from the collective strata company to you, the individual owner.
And this is the weapon the strata company deployed here. They pointed to the building's bylaw 19. They argued that bylaw 19 granted the penthouse owner exclusive use of the windows and doors, and therefore, the nearly $1 million repair bill for the building envelope belongs solely to Lot 71.
Let's look closely at the actual text of Bylaw 19, because cases like this always hinge on the exact phrasing.
Oh, absolutely.
It defines exclusive use property as, quote, decorative fixtures and fittings, including but not limited to wall tiles, floor tiles, doors, door handles and locks, light fittings, windows, and plate glass and screens.
See, the inclusion of the word windows gave the Strata Company their ammunition. However, the mechanism of granting that use relies on the second part of the clause.
Right.
Bylaw 19.2 explicitly states that the Strata Company grants this exclusive use to any proprietor who, quote, signs a written consent in a form reasonably required by the Strata Company.
Wait, so the bylaw physically requires the owner to sign a piece of paper agreeing to take on this massive financial liability?
Yes. Because you cannot be secretly burdened with the maintenance of common property. For the risk to shift, the law demands explicit documented consent.
But here's the crazy part. The tribunal documents note that both parties searched their archives, and nobody could find a single scrap of paper proving that the current owner of the penthouse, or any previous owner of that lot, ever signed a written consent accepting this exclusive use property. The paperwork simply does not exist.
What's fascinating here is how the Strata Company attempted to circumvent this missing document. Realizing they couldn't produce the consent form, they petitioned the tribunal to essentially reinterpret the text. Yeah. They argued that the overarching intent of the original developer was clearly for owners to maintain their own windows. Therefore, they suggested the tribunal should just read bylaw 19.2 as if the words requiring written consent were never written at all.
They wanted the tribunal to surgically excise inconvenient words from a legal document just to make their preferred billing scheme work.
Basically, yes.
I mean, that ignores the entire foundation of property law in this country.
And the tribunal agreed. They flatly rejected the argument, anchoring their decision in a foundational legal concept called the Torrens Register Principle. To understand why the tribunal ruled this way, you really have to look at the Kelly and Westfield precedents mentioned in the ruling.
Wait, so when they rely on the Torrens Register, they're essentially leaning on the whole what you see is what you get foundation of property ownership, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, a buyer calculates their financial risk based entirely on the public ledger, not secret agreements or, you know, implied intentions that aren't even on the page.
That is the core of the Torrens system. Historically, property ownership was proven by a chain of title, like a messy stack of physical deeds going back decades.
Right, a nightmare.
Total nightmare. The Torrens system, which was actually developed in Australia, changed that to a single central public registry. The register itself is the title. The principle of indefeasibility means that when a third-party buyer looks at a publicly accessible management statement on the register, they are entitled to trust the exact words on the page.
As the High Court established in the Westfield case, you cannot expect a buyer to magically divine that certain words don't apply. If the public bylaw clearly says requires written consent, a buyer looking at that penthouse is entirely justified in assuming that without their written consent, the liability doesn't transfer to them.
Spot on.
You can't just delete words because the strata company lost the paperwork.
Which is exactly why the tribunal refused to ignore the consent requirement. But the strata company's legal team anticipated this and pivoted to a completely different statutory defense.
Right. They brought up Section 42, subsection 9 of the Prior Act, which deals with conclusive presumptions. Let me see if I have the mechanics of this right. It's essentially a statute of limitations for administrative paperwork, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Like curing concrete after 2 years have passed since an exclusive use bylaw is made, the legal foundation is set. The law conclusively presumes that all the preliminary steps, including gathering written consent forms, were perfectly complied with.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go back a decade later with a jackhammer and question whether the rebar of written consent was laid correctly.
That is a very accurate way to describe the mechanism of Section 42.9.
Yeah.
The legislature created that rule to prevent administrative chaos. Just imagine trying to fix a plumbing stack 20 years after a building opens, only to have the entire project halted because someone lost a single signature page from 2009.
It would be a mess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The law creates a hard cutoff to ensure certainty.
Okay, so the building was registered in 2009. We are well past the two-year mark. If the law automatically presumes the paperwork was signed after 2 years, why didn't the strata company win on that technicality?
Because you cannot cure concrete in a mold that doesn't exist.
Oh.
The tribunal spotted a fatal flaw in how the original developers drafted Bylaw 19. For the two-year conclusive presumption to actually work, the bylaw itself must identify which specific lots are being granted the exclusive use.
Let me guess. Bylaw 19 didn't name Lot 71.
It didn't name any lots. If a bylaw specifically says Lot 71 has exclusive use of its balcony, pending written consent, then after 2 years, the law presumes Lot 71 gave consent. But Bylaw 19 just contained a blanket, open-ended statement offering exclusive use to each proprietor who signs a written consent.
Ah, so the tribunal ruled you can't presume consent for a blank space.
Precisely.
Because the bylaw failed to identify the specific lot receiving the grant, the two-year presumption had nothing to attach itself to. The entire bylaw was procedurally defective from the moment it was registered.
It was a massive failure in legal drafting. But the tribunal went even further. They noted that even if the strata company had perfectly drafted the bylaw, perfectly identified Lot 71, and had the signed consent form locked in a vault somewhere, they still would have lost.
Wait, really?
Yes. And this comes down to the physical engineering of high-rise buildings and the definition of the word decorative.
Oh, this is where the penthouse owner's lawyers launched that brilliant linguistic defense. They pointed back to the opening words of bylaw 19.1.1.
Right.
It defines the exclusive use property as decorative fixtures and fittings. Yes, later in that same sentence, it lists windows, but the primary overriding category is decorative.
The applicant's argument really hinged on the physical reality of a 24th floor penthouse. A window installed into the actual structural envelope of a high-rise tower simply cannot be classified as decorative.
Right. It's not like a piece of art.
Exactly. It is not a mere chattel like a painting or a chandelier that you can just remove without affecting the building.
At 24 stories up, a massive pane of plate glass overlooking the water is doing serious engineering work. It is taking massive wind shear, it is managing dynamic loads and pressurization.
The windows are fundamentally integrated into the building to maintain its stability and climate control. They serve a vital functional purpose for the entire structure. They keep out the cyclonic wind and rain we discussed earlier. You literally cannot physically separate the window from the structure of the high-rise itself.
And the tribunal backed this up by referencing a foundational precedent called the Dolphin Apartments case.
Yes, the Dolphin Apartments case established a critical dividing line in strata law regarding what can and cannot be exclusively owned. It essentially established that structural components of a building simply cannot be granted for the exclusive use of one person.
But why does the law draw that line? Like, if I own the top floor, why can't I just exclusively own the structural roof above my head?
Because the only practical physical use of structural property is to maintain the integrity of the entire building for everyone inside it. If you are granted exclusive ownership of the structural roof, theoretically you would have the right to remove it.
Oh, right.
But doing so would obviously expose the apartments below you to the elements and potentially compromise the building's stability.
Yeah, that would be bad.
The structure exists to hold the collective community up. Everyone uses the structure continuously, simply by existing safely inside the building. No bylaw, no matter how carefully drafted, can alter the physical reality that structural elements serve the collective whole.
Okay, so applying that physical reality back to the text of bylaw 19.
The tribunal concluded that the word decorative was used actively to limit the scope of the bylaw. It creates a boundary. If a window is just a decorative internal feature, for example, you know, a glass partition separating a bedroom from an ensuite bathroom, that serves no structural purpose, so it can be exclusive use property.
Makes sense.
But the exterior windows, forming the pressurized envelope of a 24th floor penthouse, act as structural elements. Therefore, as a matter of law and engineering, they cannot be classified as exclusive use property.
The tribunal ruled that the word windows in the bylaw only applied to non-structural glass. And because the water ingress in this massive failure involved the structural envelope and the steel framing, the penthouse owner wins.
Yep.
Lot 71 is not subject to an exclusive use bylaw for this common property.
Which means the default legal architecture we discussed at the very beginning kicks back in. The strata company, meaning all the owners collectively, sharing the risk, must fulfill their absolute duty under Section 91 of the Strata Titles Act.
I'd have to pay for it.
They must repair the structural defect, regardless of how expensive it is. The strata company is entirely responsible for the $1.87 million repair.
So what does this all mean? We've spent this time digging into the Torrens Register, conclusive presumptions, and the engineering of high-rise windows. But this applies directly to anyone looking to build their property portfolio. If you are buying into shared buildings, strata schemes, or condominiums, common property isn't just like real estate jargon for the shared swimming pool or the lobby.
No, it is a strict legal definition that acts as your primary financial shield. The precise wording of a building's bylaws dictates who holds the bag when there is a catastrophic structural failure. The real key takeaway from the Silverview Holdings case is that you must interrogate the foundational documents.
Absolutely.
I mean, the strata manager and their legal team confidently told the penthouse owner, the bylaw says windows, so you pay. If that owner hadn't engaged their own experts to fight over the word decorative, to demand the missing consent forms, and to truly understand the physics of their own walls, they would have absorbed a $1 million loss that simply wasn't theirs to bear.
You have to read the text, and you have to understand the physical mechanisms of what you are actually buying into. Which leads me to a final thought I want to leave you with for this deep dive.
Okay.
When you purchase the luxury apartment high in the sky, what exactly are you acquiring? You own the empty, conditioned air trapped between the walls. But the shell surrounding you is a shared organism. If a massive window serves you by providing a private $1 million waterfront view, but simultaneously serves the neighbor 20 floors below you by keeping the entire tower pressurized and structurally sound during a torrential storm, where does your private sanctuary end and the collective community begin?
It's a great question.
It is a highly complex, blurry line between individual ownership and collective survival. Next time you stand in a high rise and look out at the world, ask yourself, who really owns the glass?